The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. You're living in the time of failures, poverty, and the frustrated rich. A paradox, isn't it? That in the island of plenty of the United States and some of the democracies of northwestern Europe, of Australia, and other nations on the earth, we live in the middle of a world of absolute poverty. But in the meantime, what is happening to these islands of plenty? No peoples in the history of any society have changed in their basic attitudes, have changed in their basic principles, their institutions, their entire society, the entire image of their society, in only two decades, such as have the Americans and the Britons. Now, that's a fact. You're living in the time of the sick kid, the disillusioned, bearded dropout, the time of the newly divorced mother of 40, the time of the cheating and the price-rigging executive, of the stealing housewife, the cheating college student, the dirty beatnik, the communist student, the hugely paid professional sportsman. You are living in a time of frustration, of disillusionment, and of failure such as never before. Now, I know the sun may be shining where you are, it's shining where I am. And maybe it's a real nice day outside, and when you hear the end of this program, you might not walk out your front door and step into the Grand Canyon. Unless you live at the Bright Angel Lodge on the brink of it. And so people say, well, life is going on, it doesn't sound too bad to me. You know, we like to sort of pull our own environment in after us and really deny the way world conditions are. Well, it's time you took a good long look at life the way people are living in it. Ask yourself why. What is life all about? Isn't there some purpose, some result, some outcome in this human experience called life that is beyond merely growing up and experiencing all the frustrations of youth and then marrying and then maybe divorcing and marrying and divorcing again? Getting on the merry-go-round of sensual thrills and pleasures until finally you end up with most of your teeth gone and half of your senses dulled and wrinkles all over your body and you're limping around filled with infirmities and sicknesses and wondering if the doctors will invent plastic organs to make you live perpetually before your time to go has come. You take a good long look at life and you can't help but become a little bit disillusioned because most people aren't sure why they're living today. Now, life is about something. We have our cynics. We've got our philosophers, we've got our people who say, well, they think life is just for today and to be experienced, you live and then you die. Other people think, well, maybe you come back as a mosquito and haunt your mother-in-law. They got all kinds of ideas about what life is about. It is about something, all right. And life, if you live it right, is good. And entirely too precious to waste. Everybody, if he's willing to admit it to himself in the privacy of his own mind, knows somehow there is a reason for living. There's a purpose in being alive. Now, popular songs imply the reason for living is to fall in love. And they say you can fall in love. And actually, if you will look into the source of love, what love is all about, that is an utter impossibility. And I'll explain that in just a moment. But they say in the popular songs that the reason for living is to fall in love with a member of the opposite sex. And today they want free love. And I suppose later on they're going to want dirty love. As a matter of fact, they're already having a little bit of that. You know, first over at Berkeley in California, which is now infamous as the hotbed and spawning ground of all kinds of new things in collegiate education. It was the free speech movement you heard about. And then, of course, since they became proprietors of the new status quo and found themselves over the free speech, why, they had the university professors and the president and everybody else on the run. Why, then they came up with the, or I should say came down with the filthy speech movement. Now, groups of members of the opposite sex gather in off-campus areas and have a great, naked, sort of romantic or Grecian orgy of some type. And they advocate that this activity is just fine, and they even propagandize that belief on campus. They have this sort of a plaintive new catchphrase that they're using. Well, I think that we ought to be able to do anything we want to, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else. Now, I'm going to deal with that statement in no uncertain terms on this program. What do they mean, hurt someone else? We'll find out. Now back to this thing about the idea that life is only lived so that people fall in love and then they grow up and they have marriage and children and a home, and I guess they go their way and quietly die, and then their children take over and they do the same thing, sort of an endless cycle. Well, we all know there's something more than that to life. Now love, real love, which is not lust, is an outgoing concern, a deep desire to give to the one being loved, a desire to serve and to help, an outgoing concern, sort of an emotion that is completely directed away from self, that is entirely toward the one or the thing that is being loved. But today you hear something under the terminology or the guise of love that is actually not love at all, but absolute lust. You hear the little plaintive whining songs of today, and they even have these plaintive whining instruments they use, make this horrible sound, and of course use an echo chamber to even make it more whiny and clangy and plaintive. And they say, help me, I'm in trouble, help me. I want to put my head on your chest and just cry. And I want to hold your hand, some of them say. And here are these characters. Now, you know, anybody can get dirty and let his hair grow and his beard grow and become incredibly dirty looking by simply doing nothing. It's a natural process of the human body, male or female, and it is becoming increasingly difficult to tell which is which. I don't think the girls are ever going to try to grow beards. I hope not. I hope I don't start something by saying that, because sure as I say it, some of them will go out and start shaving and see if they can't cultivate a beard to look even more like the members of the opposite sex. Anybody can be dirty just by letting nature take its course. Any old clod can do that. But here we have this fantastic phenomenon of the former leaders in the world, of people who have been pioneers, explorers, discoverers, people who have been builders, people who have gone to the far-flung areas of this earth and begun civilizations that have known no peer from the time man first trod this earth, people who have stood on principles, people who have stood for ideals, people who have had high moral standards, at least in the past. And yet in 20 short years, we've done such a complete flip-flop, such a backward, upside-down turnaround that no society in the history of mankind has ever come so far downward in such a fantastic, dizzying amount of time. Now, that's a fact, and it's about time we looked at it and realize just where our peoples are headed. There is a reason for living, and it's not just to fall in love and have a glittering romance, a big pink bubble of a Hollywood romance that makes everyone deliriously jealous. It goes far deeper than that. And by the way, what course of events is it that leads to people after they have had this experience they call, quote, falling, end quote, in love, who have had their song, their favorite color, their favorite hangout, when their romance was the talk of their circle of friends who said, I do, at the altar, and who only months or years before were telling each other all sorts of sweet nothings and things that would have sounded absolutely silly or ridiculous in the ears of someone else, and yet just a few months or years later, here they are flying into a rage, rending asunder a home, destroying a stable and secure environment for the children, destroying the very building blocks of society, smashing, rending asunder the very foundation of the entirety of civilization, becoming just another divorce statistic. What is this constant jangling, grinding, machine-like grist mill of sex propaganda, of lust, of evil, of pornography, of slop, slime, swill, and filth that is being poured like a huge cesspool into the minds and the hearts and the lives of people through every entertainment medium that exists? It's a constant thing. You can't advertise a monkey wrench. You can't advertise a piece of lawn furniture without a half-naked female body standing somewhere near it. People have got their minds so much on themselves and on the human body, worshiping the human form, so completely bent inwardly, depraved and perverted, becoming so completely insatiable in their desire for sex, whenever, wherever, with whomever, and however. It's becoming increasingly sickening and disgusting to the point of near despair. Now, life is more than just finding a mate, more than just a job, more than just a home. There's something bigger, something more, and you know it. And you know that you know it. And you know that innately and inherently inside of your mind there is a conviction that life is for a bigger and a greater purpose than just being on a merry-go-round of living and experiencing, of sensing, thinking, feeling, and then going your way when you've worn out that body and mind of yours and dying with the rest of humanity. Now, life is not just fame and fortune. You analyze, what is it people are grasping for? What is your private search? What is that great gnawing empty void inside of you? You want to take a trip to the coast, do you? You want to go to the mountains, do you? You want to drive up and down the streets on a pleasant Sunday afternoon? You want to build a new home? You want to build a new wing on the one you've got? You want to move? Sure you do. 37 million Americans are going to pick up stakes and move from one state or one part of the city or one part of the county to another part this year. And that's a fantastic problem for city planners. People are on the go. They're nettled. They're unhappy. They're unsatisfied. And they know deep down inside there's something that needs fulfillment, but they don't know what it is. Is fame and fortune? You'll investigate the lives of thousands who have had it. What do they get? Are they happy? I see some of these inane, inept, silly statements people make and the way people act when they are supposedly famous. And their lives are empty. It's a hollow, clanging sort of a death knell. It's senseless. You look at some of the... Oh, who's the most famous, so far as you're concerned? Look at some of the most famous people you know. Now, most people could name more entertainment figures immediately than they could their own closest circle of friends. If you'd really put your mind to it and begin to discuss all the ones you've known in motion pictures and television and all that type of thing, you could begin to put together a string of names that would sound like the Chicago telephone directory. People just know literally hundreds, and sometimes they could amass a thousand or more names in public fame and entertainment. Now, what about the lives of these people? How many of them, do you know, have gone through that tremendous, agonizing experience and whatever leads up to it? Well, you don't know the private squalls. You don't know all the bickering and the arguments. You don't know all of the half-finished breakfast and the thrown dishware and crockery. You don't know of all the times when the doors had slammed and somebody went roaring out of the driveway on two wheels down to the corner bar to go spend the night with friends. You don't know all the private events that go on in these homes that lead up to these divorces. And yet you know that tremendous numbers of them are divorced, that they can't successfully put together a home. Oh, they can successfully make people laugh, or they can incite people to lust, or they can make people deliriously jealous, or they can make people filled with hate. They can get people desirous of putting a 44 dum-dum slug in somebody else's belly. They can look real good stalking along with cloth belts full of cartridges and 244s on their hips in the sunlight of an Arizona desert plateau. Oh, it's exciting. It is really entertaining. But what about their private lives? Is that your goal in life? I'm just saying that the public sits back like a great, sort of a big glut with six wrinkles in our belly and with circles around our eyes, staring bedazzledly and just glaring away by the hour at all of the antics of our favorite idols, our matinee idols, as they're called, our entertainment figures. You know, every time I happen to watch one particular show, and when it comes on, my kids see this fella get this steely-eyed glint in his eye and kind of look sideways. He wouldn't deign to turn his head directly to the camera. He's got to look out the side of his eyes and give you this squint which looks to say, look out, buddy, because I'm tough. And my two younger children always hold their nose and laugh. They think it's so ridiculous. Well, I've taught them to think that. They think that's real stupid, real ridiculous, that it's just a lot of sham and play-acting, and it is. Well, you see people with their home on the hill, and you see people struggling to get a second car. And you see advertisements like this one. Yes, now even a two-car family can afford a boat. And you really begin to scratch your head and you wonder, what on earth are we doing to ourselves? What is your search? Where are you going? Just where are you going? Do you know? Have you ever stopped to wonder, where am I going? Where am I headed? Where am I going? What's my goal? What am I after? Just what am I grinding away for? What am I hitting the freeways for? What am I wash the dishes in the morning for? What are you going to get out of it? What is your life? You know deep down your life has a purpose, and the chances are you're not going to become famous. And if you do, it might wreck your life. So there must be something beyond. Now, is it to become an inventor? A discoverer? Well, investigate the final outcome of their lives. You find a lot of them who died of disease or made an error in judgment and died in some calamitous wreck or froze to death on the slopes of a mountain or didn't ever reach their unfortuitous search, such as Ponce de Leon, who searched for the Fountain of Youth. Can anybody be that ignorant today? They're doing it today. You see women searching for the Fountain of Youth. They got a collection of 120 different bottles on what they call the vanity, most appropriately named piece of furniture in the boudoir, the vanity. And they got these bottles and they're sprinkling or oozing or spraying or dumping goop and ooze and yellow gobs of stuff out of it all the time and rubbing it, pummeling it, slapping it, petting it, or fluffing it into their pores, or they're cleaning it out of their pores, or inserting it in their ears and under their lip and behind their eyelid and rubbing it in their hair. You see people walking around, and we're becoming standardized. It's been a factor. Now, you people in England, you've heard it too. In Australia, it hit you too. And the Nordics, don't worry about it. They've got it already. It's becoming a fact now, apparently, in the United States, that blondes have more fun. I know a lot of people that are just as gray-haired as they can be. Black and gray, salt and pepper, brown, every other color you can imagine. No, they're not. They're blonde now. And you could line up, and I mean this sincerely, I imagine somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 30 million American women. And if you backed off only 100 yards distance, they would look absolutely identical. Their eyes would be blue, their lips a garish red, their face a sort of a deathly, ghastly white, their hair a big puff like a dandelion gone to seed, but blonde. And very round. It's a sort of a new thing they do. It's called teasing. And you know, a real shocking experience is when you see a light directly behind one and you realize how much of it is air. You think from a distance, and especially in a darkened area, that this big puff is all hair. It's not. It's about like the one advertisement about the kind of a shaving cream that men use. You shouldn't shave with air, you know. You ought to do it with liquid. Well, all that hair is not hair. It's air. And, well, it's a sort of a commentary on us, isn't it? We're fighting it. We're really fighting it. We are not going to get old graciously or in any other way. We're just not going to get old. We're fighting it, and we know that somehow if we can tenaciously hang on to the look, blondes have more fun, we're going to have fun, we're going to be a blonde. So millions of you women are blondes. You're not really, but I mean, that's the kind of stuff you poured on your hair. Now, that's fine, all right, if you want to do that, that's up to you, and nobody's going to censure you for it, no one's going to take you to jail for it. It's your hair. It's your face. Those are your wrinkles. You can either cover them or admit them. But the thing of it is, when you look at the long-range overall purpose in people's lives, the goal, the purpose, what are they after? Apparently, they are after fending off and flooding this slowly decaying and this creeping sort of a ravage of age, and they're going to stick to that fight. I've seen some of them stick to it to age 70. I don't know what happens, whether they just fall apart all of a sudden at that age and go to the wheelchair or the rest home, or whether they do it gradually. But how long are you going to do it? I mean, when are you going to admit your age, and when are you going to settle down to a mature, dignified kind of life and fulfill the very purpose of your being like you should? When are you going to do it? Settle down and take a good long look at what you are, and what are you struggling for? Who are you fighting? Who are you competing with? Just what's your search in life? Where are you going? Now, I know it unsettles us. I know it makes us mad. I know we don't like to hear people talk about our customs and habits and the way we look and the things we do that way. I know the searchlight's pretty blinding. But I also know that this is true. And I also know that people that are fighting even themselves, pummeling their bodies and painting up their faces and trying to smooth out their wrinkles and trying to smell good and all the rest of it, are on a treadmill. They are going nowhere. And you can't devote your entire mind and energies, money, your attention, just to a sort of a struggle and a frantic attempt to compete, to look like, to be like, to have as much fun as, to go as many places as other people, and have a successful and a right result. You just can't do it. You know that your birth was for a reason. You know that your life has a purpose. And you can't discover that purpose unless you have the courage to go to the source and find out, first of all, whether life itself was created or whether it began all by accident. You need to find out whether or not there is a designer of human minds and bodies, whether or not there is a designer and a creator of mankind, and whether or not that creator has left his creation completely devoid of the very reason for its being. Without a guide, without source material, without principles, without knowledge. Now today there are death of God theologians. They claim there is no God. And at least they claim that God's principles, God's laws, God's commandments do not have anything to do with us today. So our youths, who are coming up and looking toward life ahead and wondering whether there will be a world to live on, are being told, do what you want to do. That sin is no longer sin, it depends. Everything depends. It depends on what you want to do and who's hurt by it. Now, one said recently, on this thing of situation ethics and new morality, that right is right only under certain conditions, and wrong is not wrong unless it's wrong because it bothers somebody. So this one man said, ordinarily, lying is considered wrong. Well, let's say it at least used to be. But when it would save an innocent person's life, then a lie takes on a modified moral quality. What is right depends on the situation, he said. Now, this is called contextual morality or situation ethics. Now, taking a look at this swing of the pendulum to new morality, as it's being called, which is only a clever sort of a catchphrase which takes immorality, pornography, lust, slop, and swill, dresses it up in a tuxedo, and makes it acceptable to society. That's what new morality is. New morality is adultery, fornication, incest, licentiousness, pornography, transvestitism, homosexuality. It's everything that is evil, rotten, and wrong, has the wrong result, corrupts, decays, and destroys. Everything that comes out wrong, that leaves hangovers, headaches, illegitimacy, venereal disease, destroyed minds, sick and twisted bodies, and yet they call it new morality. Now that's a clever phrase if you've ever heard one. So they say the situationalist or the new moralist is prepared in any concrete case to suspend, to ignore, or violate any principle if by doing so he can effect more good than by following it. Do you know what that means? Probably not. Well, then what is good? Well, then one said, you have to love people and seek the well-being of people, not love principles. I guess that makes King David of the Bible quite a clod. He said, how love I thy law? He thought about it. He studied it. He said it was his meditation. Why? Why did he love that principle? Well, it wasn't because he loved the principle because of the flowery phraseology or the look of the words. It was because he loved what the effect of that principle would be. Because he loved the outcome. Because he loved the payoff, the results, and the rewards of doing what that law says, because he knew it was right for other people. Oh yes, you can love principles, but you've got to find out whether those principles are real. You've got to find out whether or not there is a God. Now today we're cuddling up to our idols. We think we're not so pagan and so ancient that we have idols today. Oh, but we do. And back in the book of Isaiah, in the 40th through about the 45th chapter, God deals a great deal with idols, and there is a God, and you can prove it. You want to write for this booklet, Does God Exist, and the proof of the Bible? Why, I'll prove it to you. And right now, God Almighty, who does exist, is allowing people to prove it to themselves or to deny that he exists. And to say there isn't any such thing as a God, and there aren't any absolutes. That's up to you. But in the book of Isaiah, God shows how a man anciently would take a tree, and he'd plant it. And it would grow. He'd crop off its branches, and he'd warm himself by the fire. And then how the smith would sort of get the bellows together and the tongs and work with the coals. And he'd get together certain metal cleats and make it stand upright. And the carpenter or the carver would come along and carve a face on it. They'd warm themselves with part of it and then bow down before the rest of it. And God says, isn't that stupid? Isn't that ridiculous? Today we're making automobiles, airplanes, boat frames. We're making fine furniture. We're building homes out of these trees, not necessarily making totem poles, as the Indians called them, upright obelisks, as the Egyptians used, the Asherah, the ancient Hebrews, and the Babylonians. We're not making upright pales or grinning, leering idols anymore. So today, what are we worshiping? We are worshiping materialism. We're worshiping things, dresses, puffed-up blonde hair, cosmetics, things to satisfy your taste buds, things to satisfy your smell, things to thrill, to pick you up, to give you a lift, things to blot out of your mind at all costs reality. Something to blot out of your mind your failure, your frustration, the nettled, unsettled, feeling of futility that most people live with daily. So, mostly, we just pull in our own private environment around ourselves and wrap it around ourselves comfortably. We stick to our private rut. We live our own private, secret lives. We deny our frustrations. We drink away our worries. We ignore the world conditions in general, and we hope the future will go away. And that's the same thing as cuddling up to our idols. That's the same thing as embracing a stock and saying, "You're my God." Man said you shouldn't love principles, just love people. Balderdash, you love principles because of their rewards, because of their results, because of the principles applied on and to other people, and because of the payoff. Well, that means a set of rules by which human beings can live, work, play, and truly avoid hurting someone else and themselves. It means finding a place in life, realizing why you draw breath, why you were born, where the entirety of society is going, and whether or not you really do want the world to stop and get off because you don't want to go the same direction they are. Well, that's exactly what's going to happen. The world conditions are going to have to stop, and somebody's going to have to get off if anybody is going to be saved. Now, that's not out of date. Space-age technologists are talking about a space-age Noah's Ark to try to preserve society. So, you look at the mental cases, the pill gulpers, the glue snippers, the suicides. What do we mean doesn't hurt anybody? Sure, it hurts people. It hurts everybody. This obsessive desire to escape, to glut ourselves, to fill ourselves full with temporal pleasures, with the vanity and the lust of youth, to deny the age that is creeping up on us and satiate our minds and our attention with something other than the horrible fears of today. Well, here's a magazine that faces squarely the whole panorama and that tells you the outcome and says there is some good news. And a lot of people mistakenly think the plain truth is a magazine of gloom and doom. It's nothing of the kind. Sure, we deal with world affairs and conditions. Now, the Plain Truth magazine is telling you the outcome. There's some good news beyond. It tells you there is no need for futility and frustration. You can find real peace and happiness. And I don't mean a false sort of a sense of security at all. I mean genuine peace and happiness. You need to write, incidentally, for this booklet, on the 7 rules of success. How to make a success. And the one entitled, "Why Were You Born? What is the purpose in human life?" Write for the booklets on "Does God Exist?" and "The Proof of the Bible." And above all things, get your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine. And remember to write in for your first sample copy of the Bible Correspondence Course. It begins with the question, why study the Bible in the space age? Is the Bible relevant? Is it up to date? Does the Bible, as I've been saying, really talk about modern day problems? Does it talk about the future? Does it talk about what's around the corner in world affairs in these 60s and on into the early 70s of the most perplexing, frightening times in the recollection or the history of man? Yes, it does. And this Bible Correspondence Course begins with that question, why study the Bible in the space age? And makes it clear. And it's illustrated, and it's free of charge. There is no tuition. There's no charge, no price, no follow-up. No one's going to call on you for any of the literature I've mentioned. Request the Plain Truth magazine. Request this booklet on the United States and the British Commonwealth in prophecy. Find out where we are mentioned in the prophecies of the Bible. And then keep listening to every single World Tomorrow program and tell other people about it. Now, all you need to do is to write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. The address is Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Remember, all this literature is absolutely free of charge. There is no price for it, no follow-up. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. And so until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.